You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's Thursday, and we're going to be joined by the brilliant Adele Musa to perform the Subversity Science Roundup. We're going to be covering three specific topics today, and maybe a little bit more than that, because as you know, once Adele and I get on the air, conversations can take different directions. But three important topics that are on your mind, that are in the media. Of course, we are going to readdress fish oil and prostate cancer today once and for all, so that everybody is clear on what the meaning of this research really is. Then we're going to talk about artificial sweetener. There's a lot of new information hitting the media, mainstream media, about artificial sweetener. Does it cause some sort of dysregulation for the body to adjust to real sugar when it hits you? Does it affect you? Is it good? Is it bad? We're going to kind of weigh in on that. And then we're going to talk about something that more people were probably shocked about. And that is the linkage between breakfast and heart attacks. Is there really a linkage between not eating breakfast or eating breakfast and how it affects the possibilities of heart attack? So let's get started right away. All the way from the very, very warm and humid Munster, Germany, it's Adele Musa. How you doing, Adele?
I'm sweating, but I'm doing fine otherwise.
Good, good. Very, very good. Okay, so let's start off right with the first topic that we covered, and that is there's been a lot of discussion, some fear, some vacillation about fish oil and its relationship to prostate cancer. So why don't we start off with that?
Well, I think this is probably one of the most discussed topics on the internet in the past weeks. And I suppose most of the listeners will already have read rebuttals or comments of people who said, I've always been saying that it's not good to consume that much of omega-3 fish oil. And I personally have never really recommended to ingest large amounts. But I must concede that I'm still not trying or not. Or I won't jump onto the train and say, well, look, I've always been telling you that's not good for you. Because if you really look at this specific study, what is most surprising to me is actually the upheaval it caused now. Despite the fact that all the research has been out there for years. I don't know if I forgot to mention that on the prostate cancer special, but the possible link between high intakes or high levels, I should say, high levels of DHA in the blood and an increased risk of prostate cancer has been established years ago. And it has been ignored by a major part of the established scientists, so to say. Now, the interesting thing is that the authors of this particular paper have never really been interested in that as well and only conducted their earliest study into the possible effects or linkage of fish oil and especially DHA and prostate cancer, I think, 2 years ago. And they specifically write in their paper that they've always been skeptic about whether there may be an effect because, in general, all the in vitro data and studies on other types of cancer are actually suggesting that an increase in fish consumption and also the use of fish oil supplements would have protective effects.
Right.
So I guess that when the press release contained this information as a quote from the authors, the guys who decide which news will actually make the news, so to say, really jumped onto it because they thought all of a sudden the things have changed. But basically, what we are seeing here is just a spin-off of a study we've been talking about before, which is the infamous SELECT trial, where the scientists actually wanted to investigate whether the consumption of vitamin E and selenium supplements would have protective effects. think most of the listeners will remember that this study has made the news as well, because it turned out that, if anything, the consumption of the mentioned supplements did increase the risk of prostate mm-hmm. cancer in this study. Mm-hmm. And based on these results, back in the day, everybody was trying to, or the general perspective on the protective effects of many antioxidants was questioned when this study appeared back in the day. But up to now, we don't really know if this is really a mechanism, or if there is really a mechanism behind this, or if this is some sort of outlier or coincidence, because despite the fact that the results were statistically significant, it is questionable in how far we can track that back to the supplements in the original study or in the original setup, and it is even more questionable what we can make of the data from this study, which was not even meant to elucidate the influence of omega-3 fatty acids on prostate cancer, in terms of a mechanistic or a direct effect, direct negative effect of the omega-3s on the prostate.
Okay, so the irony of all of this is that this is really the same research being recycled for headlines. Really, what let's face it, the reason why this was done this way is because we know that so many people take fish oil supplements today that would pique their interest to learn more about, oh, wait a minute, I take fish oil supplements. You know, this is something. So it's all about getting eyes and ears on TVs and radios for nothing else. So, good, I'm sorry?
I would disagree that this was the original intent of the researchers.
No, it's the original intent of the media. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
this is the media's spin. That's all this is. So what do you think the original intent of the researchers really was?
I think the intent really was to find further confirmation that this that relation is there, because many of the previous studies did not have so many participants as the SELECT trial, and were not that closely, or there was not as much data available, because for this trial we have really abundance of data for all, including PSA levels and other informations that we don't have for many of the previously conducted studies. So in general, this is a good idea to recycle the data from this trial, because you get all those information. But on the other hand, the main problem here is that we are looking at a certain time point and trying to figure out whether the amount of the different omega-3 fatty acids in the blood of the subjects at this one time point had an effect in general on their risk of prostate cancer, or whether it correlated with prostate cancer. And this is problematic, because in general you could assume that everybody who has participated in this trial, for example, and especially those who may have expected that they are at a higher risk of developing prostate cancer, could just have started to supplement with fish oil, because in general, back in the day at least, everyone believed it would protect you. On the other hand, one thing that the data set does not allow for, although it provides a lot of general information, is it does not really have real extensive nutritional components. So we don't even know if the fish oil comes from fish oil caps, if it comes
right.
from fish, or if it's just coincidental, you could even argue that maybe if you have got prostate cancer, your body doesn't use omega-3 fatty acids that well.
Or you could also argue that because you have prostate cancer, the body is synthesizing more of it in an effect to try to suppress something.
Exactly. So we don't really have a direct connection to the dietary intake that would warrant the statement that ingesting high amounts of fish oil or eating fish very frequently would increase your risk of developing prostate cancer. Furthermore, we have plenty of data which appears to show that in the long term, you may have a higher risk of developing prostate cancer But on the other hand, you have a lower risk of dying from prostate cancer.
And that's another important thing. One of the things that we learned from the prostate cancer show was when we talk about prostate cancer on a population basis, we're talking about the complete population of men, we're talking about less than 1% of men who actually develop prostate cancer. Isn't that, didn't we discover that in the research?
I don't know the exact figure, but it is a couple of dimensions lower than the risk of heart disease.
Right.
And we all know that at least for the ingestion or for the consumption of fish, it is pretty sure that this is all beneficial in terms of your risk of dying of heart disease.
Right.
As far as the supplementation of fish with fish oil is concerned, there are a couple of scientists who doubt or who are at least not sure how much it takes to generate the most beneficial effects. As far as fish is concerned, it appears that eating fish 2 times a week has a very profound effect on your risk of heart disease.
Well, I want to talk about this. I don't want to leave this subject yet. I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about two things. Something that I learned from you was your observation on the ratios of EPA to DHA in commercially produced fish oil supplements versus naturally occurring in fish. Then let's talk about krill oil for a second, triglycerides, and something else that you pointed out that was done in a study with women, but needs to be spoken to, even though this was a study on dyslipidemia, but needs to be spoken to about when we talk about supplementing with fish oil, and that is the oxidation level of the fish oil when it goes rancid. There's other things here. So let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. Please, you don't have to wait for this show to learn these things. If you go to subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com, you can get this information on a daily basis. Adele Moussa produces a blog that is beyond comparison to any of the blogs out there when it comes to research in the area of fitness, health, nutrition, longevity. Better than any magazine that you could buy at the newsstand. And it's free. Go to subversity.com today and be smarter tomorrow. We'll be right back.
That girl is pretty wild.
You don't have to wear that dress tonight.
That's the kind of girl you read about.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. WhayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WhayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.com. Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a 1-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Could Altrian supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrian C and Altrian ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrian C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrian ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrian cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Subversity Science Roundup on Superhuman Radio. Okay, I threw quite a few things at you going into the break. So first of all, let's talk about something that you observed, and that is the ratios of EPA and DHA found in commercially produced fish oil supplements versus that found in fish. Why would it be different, Adele? Assuming that the fish oil is coming from fish.
Yeah, you would mean that. But I'm not even really sure about this. No, I'm just kidding. I think if you look at the ratios you get or you find quotes for in the scientific literature as far as whole fish is concerned, you always have a majority of or a large part of other tissues which are analyzed as well. You should be aware that the fish oil industry obviously does use what cannot be sold as fillets and as the whole fish we are eating. They are not taking the same fish they could sell as a whole fish for much and generate a much more revenue and producing fish oil out of this.
Right.
So maybe this explains the difference. But the mere fact that the ratios are different also means that the ratios you will get from supplementing with fish oil are not the same as you will see when you're eating a whole portion of fish.
Exactly.
Although you must concede that the different types of fish also have different ratios of EPA to DHA. In general, they do not contain that much EPA as fish oil caps do.
Okay, so now let's talk about the difference between krill originated fish oil supplements and the traditional fish oil supplements. Is there much of a difference? I know you've talked about the triglyceride issue. What have you discovered from that?
Yeah, there's a difference as far as the form of omega-3 fatty acids in it is concerned. The fish oil caps come with almost exclusively triglyceride-bound omega-3s or omega-3s in triglyceride form, and those are more difficult for your body to assemble into phospholipids and make them part of the cells, which is actually, at least as our knowledge as of now tells us what you want, that they are also used as part of the cell membrane. And the triglyceride ones are have to undergo a complex processes in order to become available for this. So if you conduct a study, you can actually confirm what many of the krill oil supplement vendors are using as their main sales pitch. That especially if you look at the actual cellular levels of omega-3 fatty acids, this is a major advantage of having them already in the phospholipid form in the krill oil. And there are also other oils, for example, whale and seal, which have a very high amount of phospholipid-bound fatty acids. And it is not quite sure whether this is a real disadvantage or whether you can compensate for that by just taking more fish oil. But aside from the fact that you get more EPA and DHA in fish oils, there is still the issue of contamination out there. And this is not just about usual suspects such as lead or other heavy metals, but if you look in the literature, you will find that there are also pretty high amounts of other so-called toxins in it, which are, for example, chlorinated pesticides and PCBs. And for the chlorinated pesticides, just to put it into perspective, the content of some fish oil that was tested in a study which was actually intended to provide or to explore a means in order to remove them from fish oil was in the range of was in the range of peppers. And I don't know, for those who are not living in Europe, they probably haven't heard of the scandal back in the day when scientists discovered that the peppers from Spain contained about as much of these pesticides as the whole other vegetables altogether would have.
Mm-hmm.
So, although you only consume very low amounts of this, and you could say that this is probably not much of a problem, it could be more problematic because in this case they probably have a higher bioavailability because they are not directly bound or come directly with the fat that will help in the usage, so to say,
right,
of pesticides inside your body. So this is one of the few hypotheses that have actually been proposed for the potential negative effects or to explain those negative effects, because otherwise there's just the oxidation issue you already mentioned.
The rancidity of the oil, obviously, is something that's in the control of the manufacturer, right?
Yeah, and actually, this is one of the things that appears, or at least for the major companies, it is tested relatively often. Unfortunately, you don't know what happened to the fish oil before you buy it.
Right.
So it can leave the facility at a very low oxidation level, and until you use it, it can be oxidized. And the vitamin E, the additional vitamin E that is put into the pills, is not especially helpful. And this is actually a major advantage of real fish over fish oil, because I don't know if there's a similar saying in the English language, but in German you say, der Fisch stinkt vom Kopf. The fish is stinking from the head. And
the fish is filthy from what?
Filthy from the head.
Okay.
And you always get the advice to look at the eyes of a fish in order to estimate whether it's fresh and colored. And there are certain molecules in the fish that will make it absolutely unpalatable before the omega-3 fatty acids are so rancid that they could probably be a hell or could even do harm to your health. So you would probably never end up eating a fish like this. But all those molecules are removed when the filtered fish oil is produced,
right,
and you cannot really taste whether it's rancid or not.
Right, and they're it's encapsulated, and I'm sure that they use different types of deodorizing processes. Sometimes they have lemon flavoring in them. So these nasty alarm signals are designed to be covered up in supplements. Okay, so let's summarize something from you, Adele. In your humble opinion, what should men do about this research? Should we continue to take our fish oil supplements? Should we abandon them for fish or krill oil, or should we just not do anything at all?
Well, I've always been suggesting to rather lower your intake of omega-3 fatty acids and try to get your omega-3 fatty acids mainly from food, not going beyond, say, maximum of 2 or 3 fish oil caps per day. And I stick to that because I don't think that the currently available research, and especially not this one study that does not really add much to what we already knew, is reason enough to totally abandon fish. especially because we don't have a real mechanism that could explain it. There's one thing that pertains to what we've been talking about in the prostate cancer special before. It could be that the effect it has on a certain protein, which is actually upregulated when cells degenerate and will produce an increased amount of reactive oxygen specimen, hampers your body's ability to kill the cell in time. So this could potentially explain why there may be an increased risk of developing prostate cancer. But this has not been established yet, and is only a hypothesis. And therefore, and especially in view of the other health benefits you actually get, I don't think it would be wise to especially eliminate fish. And if anything, reconsider if it's really necessary to take copious amounts of additional fish oil every day.
Right, right. Okay, so there you have it. Okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to pick it up. We're going to change directions a little bit. You're listening to Super Human Radio. This is a Subversity Science Roundup. The direction is going to go more towards nutrition, or the lack thereof, in a moment. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER. At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yes, Fever.
Welcome back.
It's just you and I against the solar system.
Okay.
Machine, we shall win.
So, a couple other things have been in the news. We're going to start off with one of them right now. Some research about artificial sweeteners has been recycled recently on NPR, National Public Radio, and also the BBC. They talked about a meta study, I believe, that has recently done linking artificial sweetener to a dysregulation of the way the body then handles real needs for insulin, which has made a lot of people rethink artificial sweetener and also asked the question about stevia. So does stevia do the same thing? Anytime the body appears to prepare preemptively for the onslaught of sugar, and this obviously happens at the tongue, insulin rises, getting ready to do what it needs to do, and then there's no sugar in the bloodstream, the body gets confused and like, oh, maybe I don't have to do this every time. So let's weigh in now, Adele, and I know that you dig through all of the existing research, and we've talked about this before, so we're going to build on some of the dialogue we've had before. What is new about artificial sweetener, or is it still what we knew?
Well, that was actually what I was asking myself when I got an email from Alisa asking me all of a sudden what I would think about whether stevia would have the same potential to mess up your glucose response as other sweeteners. And I thought, well, we did talk about that in one of the past installments. And only when you mentioned to me that obviously there must be some new research out there, I realized that there is some quote-unquote new research there, and dug through the usual news media outlets and found that obviously there is a new study out there, which is not a real meta-analysis, but just a review. The difference is that in this case, the scientists did not get all the data from the other studies and combined them and did a reanalysis to provide actually new information, but they rather reviewed what we already know in order to give an overview of whether or not there could be a problem. And if you look at the highlights from the study, it says, similar to sugar-sweetened beverages, artificial sweetened diet beverages are linked to obesity. Then the authors go on, they may increase the risk for diabetes, metabolic syndrome, and cardiovascular disease. They may increase the risk for negative outcomes by interfering with learning, and the reduction in sweetener use, including low-calorie sweeteners, may be warranted. Now, the whole discussion is actually pretty nonsensical because all the data they are providing is just correlative data from most of the studies, at least, were also cross-sectional. So this means you look at one time point and find that the people who are obese are consuming more sugar, more artificial sweeteners than those who are not. And what I found particularly interesting is that to make a point, they also provided a graphic which shows the trend as far as obesity and the consumption of artificial sweetened beverages is concerned. And if anything, this graphic is only going to show you that from 1994 to 2000, the consumption of sweetened beverages remained the same, but the obesity rate literally exploded. So you can maybe say that it's not useful to consume artificial sweeteners based on this evidence, but you cannot say that it causes the obesity explosion, because in the years before, when the consumption of these drinks increased year by year, nothing appeared to happen. So in general, the scientists themselves say later in their review that in none of these prospective studies, the consumption of artificial sweeteners was associated with a significant decreased risk. This means basically what they are able to show is that it does not really make sense to consume artificial sweetened drinks because it will not make you lose weight automatically. What they also mention, and this is something I find particularly interesting because the guys who did this research actually on the paper or on the cover of the paper, there's only one of the two researchers mentioned, which is kind of odd because in the news media reports you see two of them and both are quoted. But I don't know where this difference comes from. In the paper at least they say that in addition, some of the effects of consuming artificially sweetened beverages may be related to the perceived health effects of these drinks and the subsequent grant and the subsequent perceived grant of permission to overconsume other non-healthy foods. And I think this is an argument that has not really been investigated in many of those studies mentioned before, in how far this psychological factor actually comes into play. And this brings us back to what is the actual new argument, at least a new in terms of the public discussion, which is that consuming those sweeteners on a regular basis may have both psychological and physiological effects on your sweet taste. That means usually you would expect your body to react as soon as you taste something sweet by starting to produce some insulin at least, and more importantly, to produce those satiety hormones like GLP-1. And in fact, the scientists have published a paper previously, I think in 2004, I'm not quite sure, 2004 or 2007, which already highlighted exactly this hypothesis and based it on the exact same two rodent studies from the early 2000s we have. And up to now, nothing changed. There is still no evidence that this happens in humans. Also, there is conclusive evidence that there is no insulinogenic effect of the artificial sweeteners in the average human when you consume them without additional foods, which is a major difference to rodents, where we have observed a reaction to the sweeteners before. So it is by no means sure that those rodent studies are even significant, and we don't really have evidence from human studies that this physiological entrainment, which means you consume those artificial sweeteners on a regular basis, and your body realizes that he is fooled time after time again, and produces insulin and GLP-1, although there is no adequate carbohydrate intake following, he would stop doing so, and therefore you would lose control about the amount of food you eat once you start consuming real sugary food.
Okay,
again.
And I want to ask you a question now, because this is where I was waiting for you to get to. So did the researchers prove statistically that this metabolic derangement actually occurs in humans, or are they extrapolating out and making this assumption?
They are basing this on the said two rodent studies we have. And those rodent studies, for example, showed a reduction in the thermic effect food would usually cause. So when you feed the rodents saccharine-sweetened yogurt over a certain time period, they lose these thermic effect you usually see that would usually occur once you ingest the sugar sweetened or the food that is sweetened with real sugar. And the assumption is that the same will happen in human beings. Now, this would be news if we actually had a study that would show that this happens, but we don't have a study that shows that this happens. And interestingly enough, when we divert from the observational studies and go to the actual intervention studies, the two studies the scientists cite in this paper actually show that there are benefits when you consume artificial sweetened beverages. In particular, these were two trials that were conducted with kids and adolescents. One is a choice study, and in this particular study, the consumption or the addition of artificially sweetened beverages, which did obviously automatically replace some of the other beverages, had beneficial effects on blood glucose. They did not change the weight, but you don't know if they did not maybe change the body fat content, because that was what was observed in the other study, the so-called drink study, where the subjects in the active arm of the study had reduced BMI and reduced body fat. So you can also ask every competitive fitness or physique athlete, and I guess you will have 60% of them tell you that they are using artificial sweeteners extensively when they are dieting down, and that they feel that this is a great help to keep their their sugar cravings at bay. So we have this hypothesis on the one hand, and we have practical results on the other hand. I'm not suggesting that I'm a big fan of artificial sweeteners, but on the other hand, this is you could say that there are more arguments to use them, actually, than there are not to use them, if we leave potential toxicity issues aside.
Right.
And we come back to Alisa's original question, I think a question that is on the mind of most of the listeners now, whether or not this will appear with a natural sweetener, stevia. The answer is yes, because the mechanism appears to be regulated through the same receptors that actually make you taste the sweetness. So it really depends on the sweet taste and not so much on which molecule you use to elicit this effect.
Okay. Now, there was something else I wanted to discuss that arose from this initial query with you. About some research that showed that rats fed a timed meal versus rats that were able to graze multiple times a day seemed to gain weight even when they were eating an isocaloric diet. Do you remember that?
I think this was a pig study, the one I emailed you about.
Even better. Big rats,
yeah.
Pigs,
actually,
okay.
This is quite interesting because whenever you see those studies, they are usually conducted with a very different goal, because you obviously want to feed your pigs as little as possible and make them gain weight as much as possible. And this particular study showed that if you feed your pigs two times a day at a fixed interval and at a fixed time point, they will have an increased feed efficiency. That means the same amount of food will induce a higher weight gain than when you just place the food there and let them decide by themselves when to consume the food. And obviously for the farmer, this is a great value. If you don't have to feed your animals that much food, your revenue is going to be bigger. But if you translate that to human beings,
yes,
this means that the more rigid you are with your nutritional plan, the more problematic it can become, because the underlying effect, at least this is what the scientists speculate, is that you really entrain a certain rhythm, and at this time point, your body is set to storage mode even before you start eating.
So we see what we see here is the most extreme effects of a Pavlovian response, as opposed to just saliva. That the time equals the bell, the time of day equals the bell, and the body begins to prepare to store this food. So my question to you is this. As a result, and I've said this before, as a result of industrialization and sleep, but as a result of the industrialization of nations, where employers did not want to pay for people to eat on the job, then breakfast became meal one, lunch was meal two, and then you went home for dinner. This rigidly timed approach to feeding, could this be part of the obesogenic model today?
It certainly could, because in those pigs, for example, they also measured a rise in insulin before they even received their chow. So this entrainment really appears to work, and I suppose at least to a certain degree it will also work in human beings. And we all know that because when you're eating every day at 0.1 o'clock, you will be hungry at 0.1 o'clock. Why is this happening? Because your body knows food is coming. He's preparing that food that you will be eating in, say, 5 minutes. And when you don't eat, you have, for example, insulin floating around and your blood glucose drops, so you get hungry. And this is something you really have to keep in mind. You're really training your circadian rhythm by the way you eat. And there is another factor involved here, which is actually directly related to what you mentioned before, that is the classic meal pattern of breakfast and lunch and dinner. You do not just entrain that you want to eat, you do also entrain how much you want to eat. And this is a major problem in terms of snacking, because if you are not a person who is snacking regularly and have already incorporated the extra calories in your meals, You're just eating what you're eating on all other days when you have been snacking out of order, so to say. When you have had ice cream in the afternoon, you are still eating the exact same amount of food at the dinner table because, you know, I usually eat, for example, my 5 scrambled eggs and a potato and whatever. You put it on your plate and you eat it. And you don't really listen to what your body says, and even if you do, things like what we've been talking about before, the artificial sweetness and especially all the other flavoring agents we have in our food these days, they really make it difficult for your body to judge how much calories it is
right.
that you are consuming.
Right.
So you do not really have a grasp of, or you do not have the natural grasp to judge how much you've already eaten, and this will obviously precipitate overfeeding.
Okay, so we've gone a little long, but it's important. I want to summarize something here, okay? So it sounds to me that people who eat at specific times, now, not to be confused with a person who eats 5 times a day and the time that they eat changes slightly because maybe they rose later one day or rose earlier another day or they did morning fasted cardio one day. So meal one happens maybe at 6 a.m. one day, 6:30 another day, 6:15 another day, 7 p.m. another day, and you eat every 2.5 to 3 hours from there, maybe a better model than saying I'm going to eat at 6 a.m., you know, 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and so on, and have these rigid times. Would you agree with that statement, or is there more to it than that?
I would agree with keeping things flexible as being advantageous, but not at the expense of consuming more meals.
Right.
Because we are talking about breakfast skipping. It's quite interesting that the same study, which is now in the news, which found that skipping breakfast is not beneficial for you, did also find that consuming 6 or more meals per day also increases your heart disease risk.
Yeah, but so, you know what? We have to remember what meals they're talking about as well. So we're going to address that when we come back because
okay.
Then when we get to the end of the show, I've been jotting down some questions where we kind of string a lot of these things together in a continuum because they all have something to do with each other. We're talking with the brilliant Adele Moussa. This is the Subversity Science Roundup. When we come back, we're going to talk about that study that implicates breakfast and heart attack. What is it all about? You're going to learn more as you stay tuned. Don't forget to visit subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. We'll be right back.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on SuperhumanRadio.com for a free brochure.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. WhayNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WhayNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Now I'm lost, and I'm screaming for help.
In every area of the mainstream media right now, you'll find everything from Huffington Post, your local daily news, your local news reporters. They will be talking about if you skip breakfast, it could lead to a heart attack. And I really want to hear the answer because I've been fasting. I'm fasted right now. My last meal last night was 7:30. And so I have been fasting the past week as part of one of my rhythmic approaches to building muscle and burning fat and staying young. So, Adele, am I going to have a heart attack today?
I'm not sure. Your chances are, at least according to this study, I think 30% increase. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think you are, because essentially this is another one of those studies where we don't really get enough information about our participants in order to really make out whether it's the skipping breakfast or something else that is involved here.
Well, I have not seen the study. I just want to just throw one thing out there, and then I'm going to let you engulf us with the right information. But I have a funny feeling, like the discussion a moment ago about the six meals a day, I have a feeling that in the insulin-resistant population, or the metabolically inflexible population, these kind of things can happen. So let's hear what you have to say. Go ahead.
Well, I think this is a plausible thing because, in general, dieting is stress for your body, especially if it does not have the ability to get enough nutrients to fuel its consistent demands. And for somebody who does lack the metabolic flexibility, like somebody who is obese and who actually is suffering, although he's having that much body fat on his body, from not being able to access this body fat, this person is going to starve, or at least his brain is starting to believe he is starving whenever he is fasting, because he does not have the same ability to switch from his usual glucose guzzling and glucose using lifestyle to a fasting lifestyle where your body has to rely on the stores you have. So this is probably an issue, especially for those who have specific health conditions. And this is interesting because this is one of the better studies out there on breakfast skipping, and it did adjust for BMI, for health conditions, and for BMI and health conditions. And you see a clear-cut pattern in which the unadjusted plus 33% risk increase is dropping to 23 for BMI, to 21 when the health conditions are also included, and to only 18%, and it is not even significant then, to the BMI and the health conditions. So this is one factor. And another factor I feel, or that is actually directly related to what I've said before, which is the stress of dieting, is daily stress. Now, one thing that is particularly interesting about this study, and I have not read that in one of the media reports I have seen on it, is that the study population was not exactly representative of the average American being, because we have only doctors in the study and only men, and the guys were 45 to 75 years old when the study started, and their average age at the point the data was gathered was 58 years.
So wait, so I want to make sure I understand this. So this was a study of physicians, doctors only.
Doctors only from different departments, yeah.
So what this study should have been called was the doctors should eat breakfast every morning or have a heart attack, not the general population.
You could say so. And we've been talking about the issue of different effects of different or of different responses and different prostate cancer risk in African American and Caucasian individuals, and especially on the different roles of dietary of special ingredients of the diet on the risk of prostate cancer. And in this case, 95% of them were white Caucasians. So the data set is not representative, but obviously this is ignored in most of the reports you see, because it is so nice to write the statement, a recent study from Harvard was able to show. This gives the whole news item such credibility,
right,
that you ignore the potential that it may not be that significant when it comes from Harvard.
And I have to say something, and I know that I'm going to be painted as a prejudiced against physicians, but this is really true. I know a lot of physicians, and I can count on one hand the ones that I think are actually healthy. I know a lot of physicians who they breathe their own ether, so to speak. They medicate for everything. They are overweight. They don't exercise. They don't do any of the things, or many of the things that they tell their own patients to do. I have a feeling that doctors, if someone would do the study, have shorter lifespans than the general population as well. And I'm just going to put that out there, and I can, you know, if somebody wants to bludgeon me to death for making that statement, I'll stand to be corrected, but I'd like to see the research. So, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, another interesting side to this study is that a much more significant effect was observed when they analyzed the effects of late-night eating. And unfortunately, they did not really provide correlation analysis for the correlation between late-night eating and skipping breakfast, also because only few of the subjects actually said that they were late-night eaters. But in that case, the risk increase was even higher than 50% for people who ate very late at night. And we all know that skipping breakfast and eating very late at night is not exactly associated with eating healthy foods. So the scientists did try to make up for this by adjusting the data to the so-called healthy eating index. But this healthy eating index is based on the standard recommendations, and you always know that even normal people are not really willing to admit that they are not eating exactly healthy.
Right.
And if you ask doctors in a questionnaire to fill out what they are eating, I don't think that that many of them will admit to eating Twinkies and Ding Dongs all day or so. But they will at least make it look a little better than what actually is the case. So this is questionable how reliable the actual data is. And this is even more problematic in terms of the stress factor, because they did ask the participants whether they were feeling stressed in their everyday life and also in the office. But interestingly enough, the options that were available were yes or no. And I don't know a single doctor who does not say that he's stressed at work.
Right. Well, doctors, I'll tell you something else about doctors. Again, I am just making anecdotal observations here, and I stand to be corrected, so feel free to swing at me. But I would venture to guess that a large majority of doctors, let's say 80% or more, imbibe regularly on alcoholic beverages, maybe every day after work, pound down a couple, you know, cocktails, highballs, or a couple glasses of beer or wine, and they do this regularly to relieve stress. And I'm glad you brought that up because I was thinking about the alcohol. Did they look at alcohol consumption in this population at all?
Yeah, they did. And there is nothing really that really caught the eyes of the scientists. I just have to mention that they were not all doctors, but they were also a veterinarian, pharmacist, optometrist, osteopath.
Oh, okay, okay.
But in general, it is a health this follow-up
yeah.
to the
allied, health. That would be considered the part of the allied health fields. That's what that would
exactly.
be.
Exactly. So it's not just a real, quote-unquote, real doctor, so
okay.
to say. But still, many of the arguments we mentioned before also apply, and especially the thing about the stress is a major downside to the study, because you would have imagined that you could have produced much better results if you had had at least five options to say whether you're very stressed, whether you're only experiencing low stress levels or so. And they also analyzed for lack of sleep and the lack of, while they did not really provide the actual data on the correlation, you can see in the baseline characteristics that the people who skipped breakfast were also the ones who slept more often, less than 7 hours, and who watched more TV than the others.
Right.
So in general, there are many factors of which we know that they are not exactly good for your heart, which are correlating with skipping.
They didn't make the headline. They didn't make the headline.
No, they did not.
And that's because it's a really exciting headline to say lack of breakfast equals a greater risk of heart attack. That makes a lot of people that, because again, remember who the media is shooting at. The largest common denominator is what needs to be in the headline. If they could say breathing causes cancer, everybody would read that article. So that's a big universe of people. And so the lowest common denominator is what they always shoot for. And in this case, they know that some people, the large majority of people, don't eat breakfast or breakfast equals a cup of coffee and a biscuit, and they run out the door. And that's going to get a lot of people to pay attention. So once again, they pander, and the real science is lost. Here's what I want to do. I want to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want to see how all of these topics could potentially weave together and maybe even give some final prescriptive moments here in the last segment of the show. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup with the brilliant Adele Moussa, saving lives all over the world, all the way from Munster, Germany. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.com.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
You basically live life thanks to vitamin D. It affects every type of cell and tissue in your body. This is the reason optimizing your vitamin D blood level is essential for healthy living. The most efficient way to optimize your blood level is to take the perfect dose. And the most cost-effective way to determine the perfect dose is through vitamin D blood testing. The vitamin D test for Superhuman Radio is only $30, $17 cheaper than the lowest member price. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to order.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
New from Rob Regish. Purchase the Blueprint 3.0 today and lock in your free 3-month subscription to the Blueprint Bulletin. Find out what many in the BP Army already know. This is the best investment they've ever made. Includes the free Superhuman University, add 1 inch to your upper arms course, and 3 months of Blueprint Bulletin secrets to up your game. Click the Blueprint banner ad today or go to bodybuildingsupplements.com and purchase your ticket to Gainesville in the fast lane.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Doing reps with the weight of the world.
Welcome back. Okay. Let's see what we can weave together out of these three topics that we covered.
Tell my own story about how breakfast eating affected my body composition.
Please.
Because it actually did. When I was I was not exactly a beast teen. I wasn't probably not even really overweight, but I was pretty chubby when I was 14 to 15 years old, and that nagged me, and I didn't really like it, and I always tried to avoid telling my or admitting that I didn't like it. And one day I decided I should do something about it. And one of the things I did was I started to have breakfast. I was not a breakfast eater before. And obviously my body composition has improved over the years and started to become better and better. And you could easily say, well, Adel Moussa started to eat breakfast and his body composition improved. He lost body fat and he's looking much better now. And you see, eating breakfast helps. But this is a typical example of one of the things that is part of what is considered a healthy diet or a healthier lifestyle. And I made tons of other changes at the same time, and this will go for many people who are eating breakfast. Those are rather those who are adhering to the recommendations of what is supposed to be a healthy lifestyle. And we are so bombarded with the information that eating breakfast must be an important factor of eating of a healthy lifestyle, that you really cannot find out whether this is a associated factor or whether this has any real impact, and therefore you have got to be careful with this study as well as the other studies, that we do have conclusive evidence that breakfast eaters are the leaner people, but we do not have conclusive evidence that eating breakfast makes them leaner.
Right. And this is one of those things that it's part of a cohort's habits. And this is part of my frustration about a lot of this kind of research, to be honest with you. Which brings me to one of my points. And I kind of made this point before. But let's talk about this a little bit deeper. When we look at metabolic flexibility, the ability for the body to continue to sustain all of its functionality in the absence of caloric intake, this is something that we have all been gifted with, or we wouldn't be here today, because our ancestors, and I don't care what period of time you go back to, if you need to go back to the Paleolithic time or whatever it is, they went for long periods of time without food because of severe conditions and so on. And some of them died. They didn't have children. The ones that lived and then had children, they gave the gift of metabolic flexibility to their children. And those are the ones that we have today because we are here. And so when you look at the obesogenic model today, all the things that lead to insulin resistance, for instance,
it counters that benefit of metabolic flexibility. So we also look at the kids that were drinking Red Bull with diet soda that were having heart attacks. We know what happened. You're removing glucose from the bloodstream while demanding that the heart work faster and harder. And anybody who had any kind of mild underlying condition, it showed up as a heart attack in a young person. Then we look at this study, and it says the linkage between not eating breakfast and heart attack. Well, what can we say about breakfast than other and any other meal? Well, you've been fasted for some period of time. Your body needs to either shift its substrate utilization to other forms of energy or start making glucose. Either one of these for the obesogenic model person, insulin-resistant person, is an unusual demand. And now you're asking the heart to work on top of that by getting out of bed and starting to move around and all these other functions. So I would submit, and I tend to be wrong about things, and I'm willing to be, put in my place here, but I would submit that to the obesogenic, insulin-resistant, metabolically inflexible person, not only is that a problem, not having breakfast, but possibly going longer than they should go on any meal during the day because the demands they're going to put on their body is not ready to respond to because they have eliminated their metabolic flexibility. Okay, what do you think of that statement?
Certainly right, but aside from the metabolic flexibility argument, there's also the circadian rhythm involved. And we know from previous studies that, for example, skipping breakfast can lead to an overall higher production of endogenous cholesterol, and this takes place right in the night and is shifted to as far as its phase is concerned compared to the cortisol spikes and troughs by a couple of hours. So in essence, especially in the phase where you're going from one to the other, typical rhythm, you experience something like a metabolic jet lag. And I'm not quite sure if this is detrimental in the long term because we do not have the data, but this is certainly a factor that has to be considered taken into consideration when people are saying, well, we do, you're right, those studies don't give us a mechanistic explanation and they don't show us that skipping breakfast is the underlying reason. But we have this three-day study where people skip breakfast and you see even after 3 days their leptin levels went down and their glucose levels went up or whatever. This is kind of a natural reaction which is probably also more pronounced in those people who do not have the ability to switch back and forth between the different energy sources, as you mentioned.
You know, and this is really interesting because it's funny, and I've totally ignored this. I haven't been sleeping well this past week. I wake up predictably between 1:30 and 2 a.m. in the morning, and then I do fall back to sleep. And I have been fasting up until right after my show this past week, and also training fasted on the days that I trained. And you're right. When I wake up, do my fasted cardio, and have my first meal between 6 and 7 a.m. in the morning, and then continually eat, you know, post-workout, another post-workout meal after my show and so on, I sleep so much better. So your accurate assessment of what the effects on sleep are, the rhythmicity of the meals that set it up and activity levels during the day is absolutely spot on. Okay, so now let's take that and let's talk a little bit about artificial sweeteners for a second that don't deliver any type of the expected caloric load, let's say, and or sugar load that they are heralding that they're going to produce. How does that fit into all of this scenario, especially with the metabolically inflexible person?
Well, it is quite obvious that the sugar or the signal of receiving sugar and that is not followed by an actual provision of energy is particularly problematic for somebody who is obese. Because if we assume that there would be some sort of reaction to the ingestion of these foods. And we must be realistic. In those studies where we don't see an increase in insulin, you just get a 200 milliliter liquid with aspartame, for example, and you drink that and nothing happens. But in reality, those obese guys will go to McDonald's and order a double cheeseburger and whatever, French fries,
right,
and stuff like that. And then they will say, well, I'll drink my Diet Coke in order to make it to have a lower carbohydrate intake. And in this scenario, as we've been talking about, that in the context of sucrose, we do have some evidence that the co-consumption of sucrose or of artificial sweetness in general with a high carbohydrate meal will increase the insulin response, because the body thinks there's a tremendous amount of sweet sugar coming in, and we have to react to this. And this can lead, on the other hand, to at least short periods of borderline hypoglycemia, mm-hmm, which have apparently been associated with an increase in heart disease,
right,
risk, among other problems. And so, in general, it is not really unproblematic, also because if you just replace the sweetened drinks or the real sweet drinks with artificial sweetened drinks, you may consume somewhat less calories. On the other hand, you have that psychological argument of allowing yourself to eat more of other foods, and you still are nourishing your sweet tongue, so to say. You will never make the switch totally away from all the sweet stuff to something, to a less palatable diet. And I'm not talking about a diet that does not taste good, but a diet that has a natural amount of palatability and is not hyper-palatable like the diet that is served to us by the food industry. And this is probably a diet where you could trust your natural
instinct,
satiety,
right,
response in terms of I have eaten enough or I don't have eaten enough. And this is unfortunately only the case when you've always been following this diet, or after you've made the transition. Yes, it will take years for your body to reaccustom to be able to assess that. And for some people, I think, or I guess, it will never happen. And I'm always saying don't count calories or too much, or don't rely too much on calorie counting. But at least when you're making this transition, many people really need to do it. I'm not proponing that you weigh and measure everything you eat, but you have to keep an eye on whether you've just eaten a whole bowl of pasta or just a couple of spoons full.
Right.
And this is something to keep an eye on. And this is a way of calorie counting by counting foods and food types you eat, that I think this will be beneficial even for those who do not really have any weight problem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And then the last thing I want to just summarize on, and a question I didn't ask earlier, and that is about cod liver oil and how that fits into the whole fish oil supplement. You really do feel strongly that people should get their fish oil from their dietary intake of fish and not depend necessarily on fish oil supplements, unless they just don't eat fish. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, because even if you eat grass fed, you still you can get all the omega-3s you need from grass fed. But on the other hand, it makes it more imperative to cut back on all the standard omega-3 or high omega-3 foods. And this is pretty difficult for some people. So if you don't eat any fish at all, I would suggest you take, and you want to take some omega-3 fish oils, do it. It certainly won't hurt you. But on the other hand, if you can make it possible that you eat at least one times a larger serving of fatty fish a week, and also keep an eye on the amount of omega-6 fatty acids, which, by the way, have not been associated with an increase in prostate cancer risk at all in the study, you will probably be about as healthy, if not healthier, compared to someone who is getting more omega-3 fatty acids from his fish oils, especially if you don't have any other underlying conditions that would require the ability of the fish oil to soothe inflammation.
Do we make the same, do we level the same playing field here when we talk about fish oil versus
cod liver oil, or is there something inherently different about cod liver oil and it is not part of the discussion?
I don't really know. I think that cod liver oil has the added benefit of having the vitamins in it, vitamin A and vitamin D. On the other hand, I personally feel that our understanding of the whole vitamin A to vitamin D ratio issue is so much in its infancy that you could say we are experts in as far as omega-3 to omega-6 fatty acids are, and have almost never heard about the fact that it may be important to have a certain ratio of vitamin A to vitamin D in our diet.
Right.
And I'm certainly not one of the people who are condemning vitamin E as vitamin A as being toxic or as being a driver of obesity, which some people appear to conclude from the fact that increases in the binding protein are associated with a higher risk of obesity. But that does not really, the binding protein levels do not correlate with the vitamin A intake. This is something people usually overlook. So I'm not quite sure whether it would be wiser to choose cod liver oil or whether it would be better to use fish oil. Also because I think that there are not so many differences aside from the added value of the vitamins. Although when you look at the typical ratio of EPA to DHA, I think I remember that back in the day when I tried to figure out where those different ratios came from, I found that in general most cod liver oils have a lower EPA to DHA ratio.
Yeah, they do.
They have higher amounts of DHA than the average fish oil per molecule of EPA. And if we discard the prostate cancer issue, where actually the DHA appears to be most detrimental, funnily, most of the beneficial effects that arise from the supplementation of fish oil, especially also those with respect to Alzheimer's, etc., they appear to be rather connected to the DHA
right.
To the EPA. And we can, our ability to produce some EPA from the short-chain omega-3 fatty acids is not exactly good, but it is much better than to take even the next step to produce from the EPA DHA. So from this perspective, it is more important for you to, or if you want to supplement, it is probably more important that you get the DHA than that you get the EPA.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Okay. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here. Three very, very high-level stories in the media today. Hopefully, we've given you some insight into where you should stand and what you should believe. And again, it always comes down to the same thing. When you start reading the research and teasing out the actual facts, it's always quite often, if not always often, that the mainstream media is pandering to the lowest common denominator to get people to read something or pay attention to a news report. And unfortunately, in doing so, the important and salient information in the research is just thrown out the window, which in my humble opinion, means that the mainstream media is causing more people to become sick and perhaps even shorten their lives than they need to be. That's why you have to turn to somebody like Adele Musa, who extrapolates all the information out, gives you the truth, unbiased, no dog in the fight, all sides of the reality. Good. I'm sorry, Adele. I didn't mean to step on you there.
I think that one of the major problems is that no one really ever tells people that what has been observed there is just a correlation or an association, and we cannot be sure that there is a mechanistic connection between the two parameters we observe. So whenever you read news like this, they make it sound, at least for the average person, as if the scientists found that somebody, for example, took three fish oil pills per day and developed prostate cancer. But as we've pointed out today, we are always talking about associations, and we do not even have any information about whether those patients were taking fish oil pills, whether they were consuming higher amounts of fish, or whether, as you have suggested before, there may be some kind of hidden mechanism by which all of a sudden the ability to produce long-chain fatty acids from the short-chain omega-3 fatty acids is increased when you develop cancer, and therefore the levels were higher.
Right. Right, which is similar to the research that showed that the vitamin B12 was higher in individuals with certain types of cancers. And as you pointed out, it could just be that the methylation process was flawed in these individuals, and that could have had an indirect effect on them developing cancer. So the B12 wasn't the cause of cancer. It was one of the side effects of a malfunctioning methylation process, which may have been at the cause of the cancer or not eradicating the cancer sooner. It's,
right.
You know, it's a cause and effect relationship here.
Yeah, and I admit that it is too complex for the short news items to produce, to include all this information. But on the other hand, the result is, as you mentioned, that people are often totally confused and they are torn between this position, and they are always making change, constantly making changes, so that they do not even have the chance to realize what actually works for them. That's the same with the constant fat diets you find in the fitness magazines. Now it's I don't know what kind of diet where you eat only food type A and food type B, and people follow this until the next magazine is released and the next diet is posed.
Right.
Only not even and they are not even able to realize whether this is working or not. Same for training plans. Look at the fitness magazines. People will pick a training plan from January, go to the gym maybe 8 times, if at all, and then switch to the one from February because the one from January didn't work for me. So I guess I tried the one from February. It will probably be much better for me.
Yeah, I know. That's funny. It's almost like a form of attention deficit disorder, but specifically placed in the area of physical fitness and maybe even health. Adele, thank you so much for all the great information.
You're welcome.
And everybody, go to subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com. Don't miss a day, because Adele is always putting out great information. Tomorrow's Friday, Casual Friday. Alisa and I will see you then. Thanks for listening.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.